It's Rugby Rants Banter, episode 217.
Hi shitties, it's me, Eddie Stevens. The time is irrelevant. It's a Tuesday. I'm back in my shed. I had a weird night. My girlfriend pervert shamed me, essentially. It started because I was being very smug and high and mighty about the fact that I don't smoke weed. Marijuana, pot, reefer. I don't do it. I don't smoke it because it makes me feel insane. It does bad things to me. It makes me really paranoid and scared and masturbate-y, weird things. and it makes me ruin my diet. There's also, I'm just not a big fan of smoking weed, right? But here in America, weed has become like, everyone's a born-again pothead now. Like, it's the... Now that it's been basically legalized, I feel like the medicinal benefits of it are being glorified and the downside is being sort of ignored. Because most of my friends are stoners and they're high all the time. And, you know, I'm saying this from a position of being an absolute failure in life, but still, I can see that they lack drive and energy and enthusiasm because they're always fucking high. And they will tell me that they don't feel normal if they're not high, which to me is a problem. But anyway, I'm talking to my girlfriend about this because she and like, I don't want to get into it, but a lot of people that we know smoke weed medicinally, right? It's like because of their anxiety. It doesn't make sense to me because I get insane anxiety when I smoke weed, regardless of the strain. People tell you there's like sativa and indica, and one of them apparently relaxes you and the other one can make you more paranoid. Why would anyone want the one that makes you paranoid? It doesn't matter. I was just sort of saying, I feel like for a lot of people, it's a crutch, and for a lot of people, it's just another addiction. It's just they use it to replace a different addiction. Do you know what I mean? And I can't remember. We weren't like disagreeing necessarily. But she just suddenly goes, she says, well, you know, there's different types of addiction, aren't there? There's alcohol addiction, there's weed addiction, there's porn addiction. And she like gestured at me, like porn addiction, as you well know, because you suffer from it. And I thought that is bullshit. I don't even look at porn anymore, not really, because I've looked at too much. I'm done with it now. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're like me, like I'm 44. If you're around my age, then you basically went through puberty as the internet was being invented. Like, I remember before the internet, in fact. I went through puberty before the internet was invented, but I was at my sort of masturbatory peak when you're like 16, you know? That's when the internet was becoming a thing. And when it first came out, you remember what it was like. You could just go to the computer room of your school, have a friend stand by the door and watch, you know, cover you, and you could just print a pair of tits, right? Not a fucking 3D printer, actual sex doll to fuck like the kids are doing nowadays. I mean, you would print a picture of Samantha Fox, right? Or someone, Linda Lusardi, was that one? Just a chick, like a page 3 girl with her tits out, and it would take half an hour, and you would come within that half hour. Before you'd even finish printing it, you'd go, oh, come. And then you would tear it and run home with it, and you would take turns, you'd share it with your friends. And that's all it took to make you come back there. But after a while, you become desensitized to that, don't you? Tits aren't enough. So then you start seeing pussy. Like, full nudity. And then sex, like, actual sex. But it's never enough. You always, the more you see, the more you need. So, tits leads to pussy. Pussy leads to full sex. Sex leads to, I'm talking about pornography, right? Sex porn leads to blowjobs. Blowjobs leads to lesbian porn. Lesbian porn leads to fucking tranny porn. And the next thing you know, you're masturbating to things that aren't even technically considered pornography anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can go on my laptop when my kids aren't around. I can beat off to porn, and I can just leave the laptop open because they're never gonna it's never gonna register them as something sexual. They'll come home and look at it and be like, "What is? Dad, what are you doing? Are you gonna buy a monkey?" Then I do slam it shut. Actually, I'm like, "Oh no, don't look at that. That's I'm interested in monkey anatomy. It's whatever." But, like, I'm beyond all that now. I don't even bother with the porn anymore. I can't remember what my point was. Should we talk about rugby? Let's do it. It's Rugby Rant Banter, episode 216. Let's go. Well, the Premiership's back in a big fucking way, and what an exciting weekend of rugby it was. I watched all of the rugby, as I am wont to do, and that's all I'm really going to talk about. I mean, we already had the Six Nations, but and that went quite well for England. We've got a summer tour coming up that at some point we're going to have to discuss. I know you don't want to, but we're going to have to. But let's just talk about this weekend's rugby. Okay, I'm just going to go through the games as I watched them and as I reacted to them, how it was. Opening game I saw, Bristol versus Northampton. First of all, I don't think I've ever seen or heard rain like that before on the TV. There was about 10, 15 minutes of the opening half of rugby where it absolutely fucking pissed down. It was 100% precipitation. There was just a wall of... They were playing underwater. And I was concerned because naturally the ball was hard to get a hold of. But it dried up and it wasn't too bad. And we ended up having a very exciting game. Little Harry Ramble. That's me. I'm the Rambler. Little Harry Randall. Amazing. Absolutely had his candle fully lit. He was running with it. I didn't see him spill any of the candle on his sandals. If you've never heard me talk before, that's a weird thing to hear. But you'll figure it out. Little Hay Randall was amazing in this match. And his opposite number, I can't remember his name, but he was the England under 20 Six Nation winning scrum half. He was totally shown up by Little Hay Randall. He had a pretty hard game for Saints. Little Hay Randall was in my fantasy team, so I loved his try. But I will say that pass to him was a fucking mile forward. There was a lot of forward passes missed this weekend. I don't know why. In different matches. But yeah, as I said, his candle was well and truly lit. Best nine in England? Maybe. You know, maybe Alex Mitchell is a better fit for England. You know, his game maybe suits England and Steve Borthwick a bit more. But I do think, I actually think Little Hay Randall in another team, like maybe a team like New Zealand, might be better. It's a shame that we couldn't compare them in this match. I wish Alex Mitchell had been playing for Saints. But, you know, Little Harry Randall was leagues above Mitchell's fill-in, whoever the fuck he was. And I think he got man of the match. That was good. Now, Bristol, as a team, have come on a lot. In the past, Bristol have not just been criticised for their defence. They have been positively ridiculed for it. The Bristol defence has sort of been seen as optional. In fact, some of the rugby brethren were making fun of their defence in this match, which I assume they didn't watch because the Bristol defence was fucking immense for most of it until Ollie Slightholm decided to run straight through all of them. Now, if Bristol's defence has been questionable at times over the past few seasons, I can't talk over the past few seasons. You definitely wouldn't say that about Yancey van Rensburg, would you? He's a very solid defender, but he was one of the defenders laying in Slightholm's wake after he scored his try. It was fucking amazing, actually. Ollie Slightholm is a force of nature. It wasn't long ago that we were kind of talking about him as an England option, and I sort of forgot about him because we've got so many good wingers, but he needs to come back into the discussion, possibly on the England tour. I think that might be a good idea. Finn Smith didn't have a great game, but his crossfield kicking was incredible. That crossfield kick from Smith to Slightholm for the I think Slightholm scored a try from a crossfield kick was spectacular. Because Saints were well and truly on the back foot. They were one man down with the yellow card, and Smith just sort of, he gets the ball and just seems to say, fuck this, I'll just put the ball where it needs to be, and Slightholm can catch it and score. And that's, he did that. And then he did an even better one for someone else to score later. He did two really nice crossfield kicks. What a class operator. But if you want to see real class in this match, Max Malins. He comes back into the Bristol team off the bench and scores a sublime try. It was a classic Malins try. He hits the line at pace at the perfect angle and just cuts through to score. He's such a fantastic player. I forgot about him. He's been injured, I think. And he's been out. He's not been, I wouldn't say he's on Borthwick's shit list, but he doesn't seem to be rated as highly. But he's such a great player. Later in the game, he took a quick tap, zipped away from the defenders, and then threw the ball a mile forward to little Harry Randall. And that was the second blatant forward pass of the match that was missed by Maxwell Keys, who was predictably shit. I hate doing this. I hate picking on players or referees. But Maxwell Keys, he's better than he used to be, but he's still shit. He's a shit referee. He misses so many things. And I can't think of an example, but when he talks to the players, sometimes it's like he says things with such authority and confidence, and they don't usually make sense. He just talks bollocks. He's a really bad referee. It's odd. But back to the team. I mean, Bristol were really good in this. I'm a big fan of the Bristol. They've got a few back three players I like, and Heward is excellent. Used to be at Worcester, I think. He always seems to have these big moments, like he'll pull off some really, like a really big try-saving tackle, or do some amazing finish, or a really amazing offload, always on big occasions. And in this match, he set up Ibatoye for a lovely try at the end of the match. I don't think Heward will ever be in England contention, but I really rate him. In the end, it was a bit of an ass-kicking for Saints, wasn't it? I was a bit sad about this. I was feeling like they must be missing a bunch of players, but the only ones I could think of are Alex Mitchell and Tommy Freeman. Now, those are big losses, but still, you know. Bristol are legit now. They were looking good before the break, and this is another big win. And the rugby brethren will continue to write them off, but Bristol can beat anyone when they're firing. It's just about getting that consistency. Moving on, Leicester versus Gloucester. It's weird. I remember Leicester winning this game, but of course Varney scored that amazing try at the end to win it. It was an interesting game. It was really strange. The thing that sticks out to me the most for some reason, and it's kind of boring, so I don't know why it does, but I thought it was strange that the referee wouldn't go back for the TMO intervention for an offside, where the Gloucester player knocks on. I think was it Freddie Clark caught it? And they gained about 40 metres. And the TMO mentioned that there was a knock on, and the the referee said it's too late and play on. I'm not sure how I feel about it, because I don't like TMO interventions, and I don't like having to go back when we've been playing for a while, but that was a big moment. Zach Mercer had a really good game. Mercer's interesting to me. I absolutely do think he should be on this next England tour, and he needs to be given a bit more of a chance. However, you know, there's people freaking about Mercer not being in the England squad. Well, Mercer is a really good player, but he doesn't have a God-given right to be in the England squad. People seem to think he does, especially after his spell in France, where he was like the shit. But a lot of English players have looked like they're the shit in France. When he came back, wasn't really playing well enough to warrant an England call-up. And don't forget, he was literally outplayed by Alex Dombrandt in a head-to-head match not too long ago. However, before I say that, the other thing is, look, we got Ben Earl, at eight for England, who is legitimately looking like the best number eight England has ever had. Like, I don't think that's an exaggeration. I think if he continues to play the way he has played for England over this last Six Nations, if he can maintain those standards for a few more years, he'll go down as the greatest England eight ever. So there's no way you can freak out and say Mercer should be in there ahead of Earl. No one surely. Well, some people would say that, though. What was my point? Zach Mercer did have a good game, though, and he is a unique number eight with skills that some of the others don't have. And I do think he and Barberry deserve to be brought into the England squad sooner rather than later. I was watching Freddie Stewart very carefully in this match. I wanted him to have a big game to compensate, to make up for being dropped by England. He had his moments, but it wasn't what you would call a world-class showing. Also, I've said this before, I'll say it again, I'll never stop saying it. They have got to change the law on being held up over the try line. They've got to. It's nobody likes it. Everybody hates it. It's stupid. And they need to change it. That's all I have to say about that match. I don't know if you can tell. I'm kind of rushing through this podcast because I went for a run. I made a Rugby Rant About video that should be on YouTube soon, depending on... I don't know if I'll be able to get it done. Like, when I say I want to do something, it's like my ADHD means that there's no guarantees, even for me, that something's going to get done. It's like I'm at the mercy of whatever version of me the day produces. Do you know what I mean? Like, hopefully I make this fucking YouTube video. Anyway, moving on. Exeter versus Newcastle. I fell asleep during this match and I was bored shitless. And I don't know if it was because the game was bad or I was just really tired. But all I saw was Stevenson low-mooing Josh Hodge. A great run by Stevenson, but does this put a massive question mark over Hodge's credentials as a future England star? He is phenomenal in attack, but you can't get away with defensive weakness like that. Now, it's just anyone can get their head in the wrong place, mistime a tackle, get bowled over. It can happen to anyone. But when you look at the way he's built and then you see that, and, you know, Stevenson isn't the biggest ball carrier in the Premiership, I don't recall it being a huge problem for Josh Hodge, but it just puts a little bit of a question mark over him. Right before I fell asleep, I did see the Obatoyinbo fuck up where he very athletically and skillfully manages to keep the ball in play. And when I saw it happening, I thought, because I was drifting off at that time, I thought he was on the attack. I thought he leapt through the air and flicked it back, and then his own player caught it and scored. And then I realized, oh, snap, wrong team. Anyway, Exeter did win that. Now, I do want to tell you, I was chatting with Mooney from Tribe Talking Podcast, not Maulover. What kind of an idiot would say that? And we were talking about, I've got to remember the name of the player. I'm looking. Where is it? What is, oh my God. Sorry. Where is it? I'm sorry. I'm just looking to see who we were talking about because he's Wimbush. What a silly name. The Exeter centre, who is, I think, Welsh, but looking like England are going to steal him from them in a... What's his name? Feyawoboso type move. It's really upsetting the Welsh, who are a little bit hypocritical because they've taken a number of English players over the years, albeit under different circumstances. They usually wait a few years and give England a chance. We're sort of stealing the younger talent now. But anyway, I digress. Mooney from Tribe Talking said that Wimbush is bigger than Russ Tuima. Now, Russ Tuima is like 20 stone. And I was like, oh, you mean he's taller? And Mooney said both. And I'm looking at the stats. According to Mooney, he looks like he's over 20 stone. He's an absolute monster. Sorry, Mooney, I refuse to believe this. It doesn't look like he could be that goddamn big. Russ Tuima is a giant and he's a forward. But if Wimbush is anywhere near that big and has any talent, get him in the England squad right away. That's all I'm saying. Moving on, Bath versus Sale was a really great match. You know, Austin Healy point, and there's, you know, a lot of controversy around this. Austin Healy pointed out that a lot of decisions were going Bath's way in this match. Missed knock-ons, forward passes, offsides. And he was right. Even without Healy saying that, I noticed that. It was like the game was rigged in Bath's favour. But it didn't need to be, because Bath was significantly better than Sale anyway. Thokkonasinghe, in particular, was so destructive. That first try with the Ted Hill run and the offloads and then the Thokkonasinghe finish was unbelievable. So, as I was saying, Austin Healy pointed out all these forward passes. The pass in the build-up to the first Bath try by Gallagher was a mile forward. Really weird. You know, I was watching this match and I noticed the Bath odd socks. It turns out they were all wearing odd socks for Down syndrome awareness or something. I didn't know that at the time and I just thought it looked really good. One blue and white, one yellow. It was a really cool... In fact, they all looked good with odd socks. All teams should play with odd socks, I think. Ben Spencer started really great in this match until Tom Roebuck picked his pocket. And that made it... That sort of took the... I don't know what the fuck I'm trying to say. Ruined what was a really good performance until then. And he made a couple of other mistakes, actually. But that try-saving tackle he did on Aaron Reed was absolutely incredible. But then again, he was playing against... I was going to say, his performance overall, he did look good. But he was playing against the most overrated nine in Premiership history. That little prick, wannabe tough guy. I don't like Gus War. I saw a number of little cheap shots from him. Like, he's always doing these nasty little and getting in people's faces and acting tough when he thinks he can. But listen, don't give me that. People always say, well, all scrum halves do that shit, don't they? But they actually don't. You know, they're niggly, but they're not, you know, I saw him, like, there was a ruck where he, like, actually flew in and hit someone who was completely unprotected. In a way that he would never do if the guy had the ball. You know, he's like, he's a bit of a, I just don't like him. And he's not a good player. And I don't know how Sale is starting him. Even with Rafi Quirk out injured, although he came back, didn't he, in this match, came off the bench, but not enough time really to do anything. I don't know how they don't have a better option than Gus War. I was just thinking, you know, Ben Spencer playing really well, really. He had a good game, except for that Roebuck intercept, which could happen to anyone. But a lot of people have complained that Spencer should have seen more game time in the Six Nations. And I think that's true. I think he hasn't really been given a fair chance, and he hasn't been given as much time as his club form has granted him. Like, I feel like he's been good enough that he should have been picked probably ahead of Danny Kerr. You know, I'm a big Danny Kerr fan, but I think Ben Spencer was the more informed player. But if Spencer deserved more game time in the Six Nations, what about Roebuck? I've always loved Roebuck, and he looked really good in this. Where he, from that intercept, he finished that try really well. He's also really good defensively. But again, we got so many good wingers now, don't we? It's very hard. You got Tommy Freeman playing really well. Feo Oboso, generational talent, playing really well. Elliot Daly is always an option. It's hard for Borthwick not to pick him. Max Malins is still an option. Ollie Slightholm. Louis Liner no longer an option. But what about Caden Murley? You know? Will Muir, there's so many options, but I did say during the Six Nations that I would like Roebuck to start. My first choice back three right now is probably It's tricky to decide fullback, but my first choice wingers are Freeman and Feyenoord-Wabosso. I don't think you can really look away from them for now. But next in line for me is Roebuck. Really want to see him get some caps. Hopefully he'll go on that summer tour. Great to see Ted Hill back in this match, running defenders over and reminding us that we probably don't need Kiwi rejects for England to do unseen work. You know what I mean? Hill can have that shirt now. We don't need... I'm talking about Ethan Roots, by the way. We got Ollie Chessam looking really good at six. You got George Martin as an option. If we're not going to have them, I think Ted Hill is a much better option than Ethan Roots, who I just don't rate particularly. I know what his strengths are. I think he's a tough player and he gets through a lot of work, but I don't think he's England quality, personally. Tell you who is England quality. Carpenter at fullback for sale. Exceptional under the high ball. He had one take under pressure from Will Muir right over the try line that was try-saving and amazing. And he's not tall. He seems like a very complete fullback. He seems like the kind of fullback that Steve Borthwick wants now. Do you know what I mean? He's almost seems like Marcus Smith if Marcus Smith played fullback regularly. Do you know what I mean? Very explosive, very confident, very good defensively. Am I on to the last match? Let's see. One, two, three, four, five. No, I'm not. Yes. Wait, what? Yes, I keep forgetting there's only 10 teams in the Premiership now. Saracens versus Harlequins. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. First of all, how cool was that playing? They were playing at the Spurs Stadium. I don't know what the Spurs Stadium is called. Is it called Spurs Stadium? Probably not. It's probably whatever sponsor they have. But it looked pretty much full. How did they do that? How did they pack? I mean, admit, I know that Saracens and Quins are probably two of the sort of more highly supported teams. They're London clubs, bigger population, easier to get people out to see them. But I was very impressed with how full that stadium looked. It was beautiful. But oh my God, what an absolute ass kicking. I did not see that coming. What else can you say? The only notes I have from this match is that Sinti looked amazing at centre. I've never seen him play at centre before. I feel sorry for Jordan Turner Hall as the new defence coach. What a great start. Was that a record loss? It must have been. I made a note here. I'm just looking at 12 minutes in and I'm exhausted. Such is the high tempo nature of this match. It is so fucking intense. It was played at such high tempo, that match. Almost entirely Saracens. I don't remember what the final score was. 50-something to something, not very much. But it could have been more. They were completely dominant. I did make a note that Joe Marler was putting in some big hits and playing decent. Fuck, yeah. Nothing else to say about that. I don't like people trying to compare Owen Farrell with Marcus Smith from this one match. That's stupid. If Marcus Smith had been playing for Saracens in that match, he'd have looked amazing. It's not fair. It's not a fair comparison. But Owen Farrell did play really well, and he is really good. Okay, whatever. I'm going to end this now. I don't feel like I really provided you with much insight at all, and I kind of rushed through it. But I promise next week I will try harder. I'm going to have a Rugby Rant Banter video out, hopefully today or tomorrow. Go to Rugby Rant Banter on YouTube and check that out. This is me walking through the forest again, talking about front row options for the summer tour. So that's exciting, isn't it? Follow me on Instagram at Eddie Stevens Massive. Follow me on Twitter at Eddie Stevens with an extra S at the end. Follow me on TikTok if you are some kind of weird degenerate fuck fiend at Eddie Stevens Zero. There's probably other things you can do. Just do the things that you're supposed to do. You know what you're supposed to do. Okay, just do it. And I'll be back next week. Bye. We'll be right back.
your